Hello and welcome to today's episode of the ABCs, Authors Between the Covers. What makes successful authors tick? What does it take to sell that manuscript? Is self-publishing a good option? Or is selling your book to a big publishing house still the only way to fly? What about keeping up with your first big success? We'll talk about all this and more on today's show, hosted by journalist and publisher Hope Katz Gibbs, author of Truly Amazing Women Who Are Changing the World and PR Rules, The Playbook. From a fatal car crash and the death of a parent to the drama of comforting a sick child and coping with infidelity, life's greatest emotional challenges play out on the pages of Caroline Leavitt's books. As a woman with children myself, these scenarios are the stuff of my nightmares. But Leavitt's engaging writing style, character development, and ability to write a book you can't put down makes everything she writes a must-read. So we are sitting here today in the gorgeous Pierre Hotel in Manhattan with Caroline, not far from where she lives, a little across the bridge perhaps, and we are talking to her about her books, her career, how she got into writing books and being a writer in general, and what she's working on now. So welcome to Authors Between the Covers, Caroline.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here and to meet you.
Yes. So tell me a little bit about this room. Describe where we're sitting.
It's amazing. It's kind of an atrium, and it's got a marble winding staircase, and there's a lot of gold leaf and candelabras. And the wallpaper, I don't even know if it's wallpaper, it's just painted mural. It's just exquisite.
Yes, and it's as exquisite as the stories that you tell. So tell us first, before we talk about the content and the different topics that you talk about and write about in your books, tell us about how you got into writing in the first place.
Okay. Well, I was a really sickly child. I had really bad asthma. So when all the other kids were out playing, I was in the library and I was reading books all the time. And the more books I read, the more I began to decide, I don't want to just read books, I want to write them. And because I had all this time, I just started writing really, really young. And I remember when I was in third grade, I wrote this story and the teacher really liked it and she wanted me to read it in front of the class. And I was really shy and I was sort of bullied as a kid because of the asthma, and I really didn't want to. And she said this amazing thing to me. She said, you know, sometimes you have to be brave to get what you really want. So I decided to do it, and I stood in front, and I started to read the story, and the class got really quiet, which was amazing. And when I finished the story, they all clapped, and I thought, oh, this is so cool. This is what I wanted to. And I started, you know, I just never stopped. I just never stopped writing, but that was it for me.
Wow. So how did you break into the publishing world?
It was very hard. I had a lot of no's. I started sending things out when I was a teenager. Of course, I got rejections. When I got to college at Brandeis, I took this writing course with this famous writer. And he basically told me, you're never going to make it. And I told him, yes, I will. You just have to watch me. And when I got out of school, I just kept sending things away and sending things away. And it was rejection, 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 rejection. And then finally one day I came home and there was another one of these big brown envelopes, and those always mean rejection. And I couldn't take it, so I ripped it up in a million pieces, and all the pieces fell on my front porch. And just as I was going inside, I happened to look down, and I saw one word, and it said, congratulations. I had won this contest, this Red Book Young Writers Contest, and the prize was publication. And after that, I got an agent, and I started publishing. It was amazing, but it wasn't until I was 28. It took a really long time.
So what were you doing for your living during that period?
I was being fired from just about every job I had. I had a job at an answering service, and I was fired because I kept giving the calls for Dr. Foot the podiatrist to Dr. Foot the obstetrician. I worked at a puzzle factory, and I was fired there after 3 days. I just really wasn't good at anything except writing, so I was really lucky I was able to do it.
Oh, amazing. So what was that year that story was published?
It was 1981.
Okay. And what was the story?
It was called, the story's called Meeting Rosie Halfway, which became my first novel. And actually, when the novel was published and it got its first review from the New York Times, I took the review and a copy of the book and I sent it to the professor at Brandeis, who told me I'd never make it. With a little note saying, see, I told you I would.
Oh, that's awesome. So let's talk about the topics that you tackle in these books. Okay. They are intense.
Yeah, they are. I'm a really happy person in real life, but I guess my inner life is kind of dark and thorny, and I had a very difficult childhood. I write the kind of books that answer questions that I'm sort of obsessed by that I want to know, you know, like, how do you really know the people that you love, or how does an Is This Tomorrow was about how does an outsider fit in a community, because I always feel like an outsider. And the book I'm writing now, I don't know what the question about that is now, but I'm just sort of obsessed with how we get through pain and how we get through suffering and how we connect to other people when it's really difficult. I like to go deep and I like to go really dark.
And obviously people like to go there with you because your books are bestsellers. Tell us a little bit about some of these accolades. Let's go back to this. You and I first met when you had written Pictures of You,
right,
which is
right.
The story I started describing in the beginning of the interview. I wrote about you for Costco magazine. Mm-hmm. And I honestly, I could not put that book down. I read it in one sitting because, well, I wanted to know what happened because it had to end happy. You get so engaged with the characters. So talk a little bit now about your character development. Do you know them when you start the book, or is it a process of...
Mm-hmm. It's a really long process for me in terms of characters. I do detailed character outlines and story outlines and story structure outlines, and the whole thing takes me about 6 months before I even start typing. And I go through and I find photographs of what I think the characters look like, and I paste them all over my writing office, so I'm living with the characters. And it's almost every time I look up from the computer, there they are. But it's very helpful because it sort of wedges the characters into your subconscious. And I think about them all the time, and I know everything about them by the time I start writing the book.
Wow. So when you finish a book, is it a loss, or do they stay with you?
You know, it is a loss, but usually by the time I'm done with the book, I'm really antsy for a new set of characters. I try to always, like, have something that I'm thinking about before I finish, so I never want to have that period of time where you finished one book and then you think, oh my God, what do I do now? So I always have the character around. But yeah, I mean, I miss them, and I think about them, and not all of them do I want to meet or know in real life, but they're a part of me, and most of them are me.
Wow. So what are you working on right now?
Well, I sold a book to Algonquin called Cruel Beautiful World that's set in the 1970s, and it's not due to them until 2015, so it probably won't be published until 15 or 16. And it's actually based on something that happened to me when I was in high school. One of my friends who sat beside in front of me in study hall, she was going out with this guy who was a lot older than she was. She was only 16 and he was like 35.
Oh my God.
And we all thought it was really weird. But she said, no, he's really nice. And they went out for like years and years, like maybe 3 years. And then when she became a senior, she decided she wanted to go to college, and he wanted to get married. And she said, no, you know what, I really want to go to college. So on Valentine's Day, he came to her house, and he shot her 45 times. And it was the one event of my life that just totally, it freaked me out. And people saw him driving around after he did the murder, and supposedly he killed himself. But there's no real, they never found a body, so nobody really knows what happened. And I've just been haunted by that, and haunted by her, because she was truly the most lovely girl, just, you know, just an ordinary, wonderful girl who wanted to go to college and do things. And her life was just cut short by someone who did not want her to do those things.
Wow, that's
a
lesson for stay away from those guys. So Did in the process of writing this book, it's cathartic for you? I mean, you talked about that when we did our first interview at Costco. You talked about how in Pictures of You, that one of the characters, Sam, had asthma. And you were able to heal some of your asthma with it. So
It's really, really cathartic. I mean, the strange thing with Pictures of You is that, you know, this boy with asthma just showed up, and I thought, I don't want to write about that, because I was bullied and shamed about that. And I kept tearing up the pages, and he kept coming back. And one of my friends kept telling me, you know, this is something you probably need to write about. And I did write about it, and the more I wrote about it, the better I felt physically. And I think it's the same thing with Cruel Beautiful World. It's sort of, it's this thing that's been haunting me, and I feel if I write about it, then I'll be able to let it go. I guess it's sort of like talk therapy. When you go to a psychologist, you just talk and talk and talk, and then you reach a point where you feel, okay, I don't need to talk about this anymore, or you've processed it, so you really know how to deal with it. And I guess that's my hope, that I'll be able to write this book, and then I'll be able to heal whatever feelings I had about this girl.
Wow. What an amazing process. Something you would advise other people to do to get over the things that are holding them back.
Writing, there are, you know, writing is very therapeutic, and there are like psychologists that tell people to write. That I think that's the whole thing behind journaling. If you write it down, it loses its power actually over you, because you've put it outside of yourself, and also you can start to figure it out and try to understand it. And sometimes just understanding something is a way to let it go.
Right. So you are also married to another writer. Tell us about that. Tell us what two writers living in the same house, what that looks like. Tell us a little bit about your husband.
Yes, I'm married to Jeff Tamarkin, who is a music writer, and he's an editor at Jazz Times. And it's actually great, because being married to another writer is being married to somebody who understands that sometimes you need to be working at 10 o'clock at night, and sometimes you're stressed, and sometimes you need time alone. And the other great thing is that we both work on the third floor of our house, so we're together all the time, which is something that I always wanted. So that works out really great too. But we're able to bounce things off each other. We say that. We have a family joke where Jeff tells truth in his writing, because he writes nonfiction. And I always say, yeah, but I tell the deeper truth in writing fiction.
That's excellent. And you have one son who you were telling me before we started the interview. He's about to go to college. Tell us a little bit about him.
Yes. His name is Max, and he's 17. And when he was young, we thought, you know, that he was going to be a scientist. And he just quickly got the music theater bug. You know, he's been like, when he was in kindergarten, he wanted a karaoke machine just so he could sing along with all his favorite songs. And he's going to be going to college in theater, and he's just amazingly talented. Great kid. Great kid.
Wow. Well, coming from the two of you, I'm not surprised. let's also talk about Algonquin, your publisher. I had the opportunity to interview Barbara Shapiro, who's the author of The Art Forger, and she said that it took her so long to sell her first book. She was in her 60s before the first book really hit, and that one took off like gangbusters. And she couldn't say nothing good things about Algonquin, and the same for you when we were talking. So tell us a little about them.
I want to say Barbara Shapiro is actually a good friend of mine, so that's nice to hear. I had five publishers before Algonquin. The first one was great, and they went out of business. Second one went out of business. Then I was signed a three-book deal with a big publisher, and they basically did nothing, and the book died. So I signed with another big publisher for a three-book deal after that, and my first two books with them, they did nothing, and the book died. And then the third book I had under contract with them was Pictures of You. And the editor called me up and said, you know, Caroline, we're not going to publish this. And I said, you're not? Why not? She said, we don't think it's special. And I said, well, why not? Can I make it special? And she said, no, we don't think so. And I said, well, can I show you the next thing that I'm working on? She said, no, we don't think it's going to be special either. So I hung up the phone and I called my agent, hysterical, because this was my ninth novel. And I had no sales. I had virtually like no sales. Nobody knew who I was. I had like a few like really great reviews, but like no real career. And I said to my agent, my career's over. And, you know, nobody's going to want to take me. And she said, just wait. We'll see. So I called all my friends crying, saying, do you have any editors that you like? And One of my friends, Kate Malloy, said, you know, I really love my editor at Algonquin. Do you want me to talk to her about you? And I said, sure. So she said, well, just write out a paragraph about what the book's about. So I wrote out a paragraph. She sent it to Andra Miller. And Andra got back to me by email and said, you know, I really like this. I'd like to see the manuscript. And I said, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So I sent her the manuscript, and a week later, she called my agent. And she said, you know what? We really love this, and we want to buy it. And I said, are you sure? Mm-hmm. Like, do you know who I am? You know, I've had like 9 failed mm-hmm. novels. I've made no money. And they said, never mind. Like, we do things differently. And they called me in for a meeting, which no publisher ever did. And everybody was there, from marketing to sales to the editor, and they all smiling. And they said, we can make this a bestseller. And again, I said, really? Mm-hmm. I said, come on. And they said, no, we know exactly what to do. And the first thing they said they were going to do is they said, well, we're going to make it a quality paperback. And I said, oh, please don't do that. Please don't do that. I'll never get reviews. Nobody will ever pay attention to me. I'll lose respect. Like, please. And they said, no, 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 watch us. We just want to do this because then we can push your career fast. So 6 months before the book came out, it was in 6 printings. I got into Costco. And in terms of reviews, I got more reviews and bigger reviews from places than I ever had before. I got Newsweek, I got Elle, they got me O Magazine, they got me every single newspaper. And, you know, they made me a huge success. And they're amazing. They're just like the best publisher I've ever had. I'd never, ever leave them. I call them the gods and goddesses because they gave me a career back. They really gave me my career.
Wow. Yeah, that is amazing.
They're amazing.
What do you think sets them apart from other publishers?
First of all, they're small and they're all involved. Everybody at Algonquin reads every book and knows something about the book. And actually, I was at a party, an Algonquin party, and one of the marketing people asked me, like, you know, are you happy? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, we're different from other publishers because other publishers, if they see an artist's work is sort of falling and they're not doing that well, then they will say, okay, it's time to move on to another author. Like, we've done enough with this. He said, what we do is we say, oh, it's our fault. We should try other markets. We should try other things and push this book and get it going. And that's what they do. They're still selling Pictures of You. They're still doing promotions for it, as well as Is This Tomorrow? And they just always, like, keep on doing that. And they're just, they really care about their authors. And it's the only publisher where I've been where all the authors care about each other as well. I mean, we all know and love each other. And it's amazing. It's really like a family.
Wow. So for all the aspiring authors out there, what is some of your top advice?
Don't give up. Never, ever, ever give up. Don't take no for an answer. Whenever anybody says no, just keep on going. And, I mean, I consider myself the poster girl for second chances because it literally took me 9 books to have a career, and it was rejection, 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 rejection. You have to just steel yourself and say, this is what I want to do, and I'm going to find a way to do it, and just, you never know what's going to happen. And if it can if it happened to me, it can happen to anybody.
So if you just stuck it out. Was there ever a moment in time where you felt like you were going to give up?
No, because what I would have done is I would have kept writing because I can't not write. And I think my next step, if Algonquin hadn't taken me, I would have gone to the really small, much, much smaller publishers. There's a lot of like really little tiny publishers. I would have tried them. And I don't know what I would have done, but giving up just wasn't in my mindset. I wouldn't have done that.
Oh, I absolutely love that. So never give up, says Caroline
Levitt.
So definitely pick up some of her books. I absolutely love Pictures of You. I can't wait to read the new one.
Thank you.
And you can learn more about Caroline Levitt at her website, www.carolinelevitt.com. So from the gorgeous Pierre Hotel in the atrium where we're sitting today, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. I just want to add that Hope and I have both dressed up.
Yes, you must dress up to come to the pier. They're so lovely here. So thanks very much to all our listeners for listening to Authors Between the Covers on the Incandescent Radio Network. We'll come back to you with another author to talk to very soon. Have a great day.
That's it for today's episode of the ABCs, Authors Between the Covers, hosted by journalist and publisher Hope Katz Gibbs, author of Truly Amazing Women Who Are Changing the World and PR Rules, The Playbook. Be sure to check back next week on the Incandescent Radio Network for another interview with a successful author who is happy to share their story. Here's to writing your heart out and keeping your dreams alive. Thanks so much for listening.